Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
It is very important to again engage in some kind of settlement negotiations for Israel and Palestine to try to move that forward. It is at the background of much of the unrest in the Middle East.
Some parts of this verge on fantasy. You know, you're going to get the Syrians to turn themselves in over the Hariri assassination. Do you get them to persuade Hamas to recognize Israel?
Sandra Day O'Connor first, as a member of the Iraq Study Group on this program last week, and former Bush advisor Elliot Cohen on Meet the Press on NBC on Sunday. We have been looking into aspects of the Iraq Study Group report since it came out, and today we will begin by getting two perspectives on what the report recommends and what it might mean for Israel. In the report, recommendations 13 through 17 deal directly with Israel and the Arab-Israeli conflict, as well as some with Syria. And we have posted that section separately to our webpage for you to see today. You can see it at WNYC.org. It's just three pages out of the report. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. The most specific proposal is that Israel give back Syria, the Golan Heights, if Syria will pressure Hamas to recognize Israel. It also includes international troops, if necessary, to protect Israel from Syria after giving up the Golan Heights. Beyond that, the report suggests two sets of comprehensive peace talks with Israel and the Palestinians in one, and Israel with Syria and Lebanon in the other. And again, you can read these three pages of the report at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. With me first, and pretty sympathetic to the report, is Yossi Beilin, a member of the Israeli Knesset and chairman of Israel's Meretz Yachad party. Dr. Beilin, a former justice minister, has a long history, as you may know, as a peace activist. That includes helping to launch the Oslo peace process in the 90s, leading the drive for a unilateral Israeli withdrawal from southern Lebanon, and convening independent talks with a group of Palestinians in 2003 that led to what they call the Geneva Accords, a peace plan not endorsed by either government. So, Yossi Beilin, welcome back to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thank you.
What do you think of the Iraq Study Group?
I think that it is a very reasonable study, and the recommendations are very important. I think that we should read them seriously, take them as a kind of a guide, and we have to understand that they are not surprising. This was actually the policy of the United States until 2000 or the beginning of 2001, and then it changed totally to a kind of hands-off policy, to a policy which told us don't negotiate with the Syrians, to a policy which boycotted everybody, the Syrians, Hezbollah, Hamas, and eventually found itself isolated. This is not, in my humble view, a policy of a superpower. A superpower should behave like, for example, in the Reagan term in the 81, when Phil Habib was sent to strike a deal between Begin of Israel and Arafat of the PLO, who was then in Lebanon. And there was a ceasefire, a long ceasefire, as a result of the intervention of the United States. Today, nothing like that could have happened.
Let's go over some of the specifics here, Dr. Beilin. What do you think specifically of this proposal for land for peace with the Golan Heights and land for pressuring Hamas to recognize Israel, Syria pressuring Hamas?
Well, I don't read it as land for convincing Hamas to talk with Israel, because if this is the idea, then I'm against it. I think that what we need is to get back to the land for peace policy. Now, if it includes also convincing Hamas to talk with us, to recognize Israel, it will be a very important benefit. But this I don't see as a part of the a necessary part of the deal with the Syrians. The deal with the Syrians should include, of course, full peace between Israel and Syria, the uprooting of the headquarters of the terrorist organizations from Damascus, to stop the sending weapons and equipment from Syria to the Hezbollah and to help disarming the Hezbollah. All these things I see as part of the deal with Syria. And my belief is that this could be our biggest contribution to isolate Iran, because Syria became an ally of Iran as a result of being cornered by all of us. And if they do have another outlet, if there is peace with us, if as a result of it they are open to the West, I don't believe that they will keep their alliance with Iran as tight as it is today. And this will help creating a coalition of moderate countries, or at least pragmatic countries, I would say, the Arab countries and Israel, against the extremism of Iran.
Dr. Yossi Beilon from the Israeli Knesset, my guest on WNYC, the first of two reactions we're getting to the Israel-specific part of the Iraq Study Group report. We'll hear from David Harris from the American Jewish Committee next. Let me dig down on that answer a little bit. First, I want to replay the clip of Eliot Cohen, former Bush advisor, being very skeptical that the kind of thing that you hope for from talks with Syria could come about. Here's Eliot Cohen.
Some parts of this verge on fantasy. You know, you're going to get the Syrians to turn themselves in over the Hariri assassination. You get them to persuade Hamas to recognize Israel.
So just on that much, Cohen went on to say this basically is the heart of Syria's foreign policy, to support Hezbollah, to support Hamas, to be belligerent against Israel, to occupy Lebanon or exert undue influence in Lebanon. And all for what? Are we going to get Syria to change its stripes that much?
Well, it is very difficult to defend Syria. I mean, Syria is a dictatorship, and it made huge mistakes, and its behavior is sometimes unbelievable. Now, the big difference between Mr. Cohen and myself is that he lives in New York or in the United States, and I live here, and I went through four wars already, and I don't want a fifth one for my kids and my grandchildren. And I have to make peace. I cannot be choosy. He can be choosy. I'm their neighbor. And even if they are not the best people around, we have to make peace with these people, if it is possible. Now, if we look at the ceasefire with the Syrians since 1974, it is being kept strictly. So there is no reason for me to believe that if we make peace with Syria, peace will not be kept. And if I look at peace with Egypt and the peace with Jordan, I can believe that once we make full peace, not interim agreements or unilateral steps, but full peace with our Arab neighbors, they keep it. And this is why I will not be choosy. And I know the disadvantages of this regime. If they are ready to keep the front with Syria and eventually with Lebanon quiet, it is in our interest to make peace with them.
And let me read you an objection from David Harris from the American Jewish Committee, who will be our next guest. It's funny because he disagrees with the report almost for the same reasons, it sounds like, that you are supporting the report. He says, quote, in a statement, AJC disagrees with the suggestion to urge Syria to obtain from Hamas an acknowledgement of Israel's right to exist. It is hard to imagine a more hollow gesture from Damascus or a more disingenuous suggestion from the Iraq Study Group. The Syrians actively support Hamas as well as Hezbollah, terrorist organizations committed to Israel's destruction. He goes on to say, if Israel chooses to seek the path, if Syria chooses to seek the path of peace with Israel, it can demonstrate that policy shift by shutting down the Hamas headquarters in Damascus and the rest of the terrorist infrastructure supported by the Assad regime, a close ally of Iran. So those very things that you hope could come from the talks with Syria, David Harris seems to say, are the obstacles.
Exactly, and this is unrealistic. I mean, I cannot afford it to give up on a chance for peace with Syria. I believe that Syria is holding negative cards, and those cards were mentioned right now by you quoting David Harris. I think that they will not give up on it before we make peace. Now, previous prime ministers in Israel, including Rabin, Peres, and Netanyahu, and Barak, did not condition anything before talking to the Syrians. Now, these headquarters of the terrorist organizations were in Damascus in the last decades. So why were they not asking for such a precondition? And why should we now, why should David Harris ask for such a precondition? Now, he is right in saying that if peace ends up while having all those terrorist organizations in Syria, we did nothing. But I believe that this should be our aim, to insist upon dismantling these headquarters. If we don't achieve it, we will not make peace. But in order to negotiate with them, we should not put such preconditions. This was always the policy of Israel. If there is an Arab leader ready to meet with us, without preconditions, we should not put preconditions. We will say whenever, wherever we are going to meet with you. It is for the first time that there is an Arab neighbor who is saying to us, I'm ready to negotiate with you without preconditions, and that we are putting preconditions to him. I don't think that we can afford it. I think that the peace is our interest. It is not a prize for the Arabs. It is a prize for both of us.
Yossi Beilon, chairman of Israel's peace-oriented Meretz Yachad party, member of the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, long-time negotiator with the Oslo process, the Taba talks at the end of the Clinton administration, the Geneva Accords that he did on his own with Palestinians outside of the government officially. But take all of that experience that I just listed. You as a negotiator in very, very tough talks with Arabs, and tell us why Syria would go for this in your view. It sounds like what the Baker Commission is asking is for Syria to not only make peace with Israel, not only pressure Hamas to recognize Israel, not only pressure Hezbollah to leave Israel alone, but also relinquish its claims on Lebanon, which Syria probably wants for reasons having nothing to do with Israel, and to get itself on the wrong side of Iran, all in exchange for the Golan Heights. If you're a Syrian negotiator, does this all add up for you?
No, this is not only for the Golan Heights. I think that one should take into account that in 4 to 5 years, the oil reserves of Syria are going to end. The oil reserves were the main, if not the only, engine of their economy in the last years. Now, if it ends, and if there is no help from the world, Syria will be in a very tough position. So if one needs a very pragmatic argument or motivation, here is the motivation. Besides it, being isolated by the whole world and becoming an ally only of Iran is not something that the Syrian people are in love with. And if you remember that their association agreement with the European Union has been frozen since April, you can understand that they are in a very difficult situation. So for them, peace with Israel is a way to save themselves. Now, this is why it is much more than the Golan Heights. It is important for them to have the Golan Heights, and there won't be peace without us handing over the Golan Heights to them. But this is not the only thing that they can achieve if they make peace with Israel. Now, if we see, as I said, that all these things are not realistic, then we are not going to sign an agreement with them. We will know all these things in advance.
Do you have any indication that the current Syrian regime is interested in this proposal from the Iraq Study Group and would engage in direct talks with Israel with no preconditions?
What I can say is that I didn't get any indication since the publication of the Iraq Study Group, but it was published that the Israeli intelligence says very clearly, and the head of the intelligence said very clearly, that the Syrians are serious about negotiating peace with Israel, and the head of the intelligence even said that Israel should negotiate with the Palestinians, and he said it against the view of the prime minister, which was very unique and interesting.
We have to go in a minute and get David Harris's view, and we'll hear some more clips of Sandra Day O'Connor and Leon Panetta from the Iraq Study Group on this program last week as we talk about specifically the Iraq Study Group and Israel. But Yossi Beilin, before you go, I have seen some kind of report that Hamas may have in some backhanded way laid a little bit of a groundwork for possibly recognizing Israel. Is there any truth to that?
Well, I believe that if they are reasonable, they will understand that one cannot stick to this idiotic ideology which says I cannot ignore effect on the ground, and Israel is an effect on the ground forever. Anybody who lives here will have to live with us if he likes it or she likes it or not. And this is why I'm not excluding this possibility. So far, I must admit, I did not see very positive signs, although from time to time there are some Hamas leaders who are saying things like this, like the end of that one has to recognize Israel, that Israel is there, that one cannot ignore it. But this is not the official view of the Hamas. And if you follow what the Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh said lately in Iran, I must admit that it was not very encouraging.
Okay. Yossi Beilin, chairman of the Meretz Echad party, longtime member of the Israeli Knesset. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
And are you convinced? Should Israel take James Baker's suggestion and negotiate with Syria? We don't think David Harris from the American Jewish Committee is convinced, and we'll hear why in a minute.
Every issue in the Middle East is related to each other and that part of the world. What's happening with Hezbollah, what's happening in Lebanon, what's happening with Hamas, what's happening with Iran, what's happening with Syria, the politics of every one of those issues relates in a very real way to the problems that are occurring in Iraq.
Leon Panetta from the Iraq Study Group on this program last Thursday. We're talking about Israel and the Iraq Study Group. We heard from Yossi Beilin, and with me next is David Harris, Executive Director of the American Jewish Committee. Dr. Harris, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be back.
Let's dig in right on that study group's proposed deal with Syria, the same thing we talked to Yossi Beilin about. Israel returns the Golan Heights. Syria pressures Hamas to recognize Israel. The U.S. and others guarantee security at the Israeli-Syrian border. Something to work with there, in your opinion?
I'm skeptical. I'll never want to say never, because I remember a couple of miracles along the way, principally the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty that came just a few years out of the Yom Kippur War. So never say never in the region, but having said that, I think it may sound like a good formula on paper. In reality, I think it's fraught with lots of probable contradictions and ultimately some deal breakers.
So let me replay a clip of what Yossi Beilin said here just a few minutes ago and get your reaction to that.
My belief is that this could be our biggest contribution to isolate Iran, because Syria became an ally of Iran as a result of being cornered by all of us. And if they do have another outlet, if there is peace with us, if as a result of it they are open to the West, I don't believe that they will keep their alliance with Iran as tight as it is today.
interesting idea, making peace with Syria, if you can make peace, if Israel can make peace with Syria, helps to isolate Iran, a motivation to go for it.
Brian, I think that there's actually a more likely way to achieve this. Again, it's a long shot, but from our conversations with a number of moderate Arab states, and that does not include Syria, there's a growing sense that Iran is indeed the major threat. And this comes from countries like Saudi Arabia as well as Egypt and Jordan. And it seems to me that if we're going to be looking for possibilities here to get a breakthrough, the bigger likelihood is to see whether, in fact, the Saudis are serious when they say we're frightened to death of Iran and its long reach in the region. We cannot let Iran afford to come out the winner in this conflict. So we, the Saudis, together with the Jordanians and Egyptians, who are also frightened by the specter of Islamic fundamentalism emanating from Iran, also through the Muslim Brotherhood and others who've been franchisees, there's a chance there. As far as the Syrians are concerned, we have to understand what we're dealing with here. And with the Syrians, it's extraordinarily complicated. In a way, they've come out the winners in the last 3 years. It's strangely ironic, Brian. If we go back to 2003, the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, the two countries on the face of this earth most frightened by the lightning victory of American-led forces were Iran and Syria. Suddenly, they were surrounded by American as friends, and they feared they might be next. 3 years later, they feel they're sitting on top of the world. They're emboldened, Iran and its nuclear weapons program, Syria and its aspirations to reassert its control in Lebanon, and we see the consequences. So I'm not at all certain that the Syrians themselves are convinced this is a moment to break ranks with Iran. This is a moment to make peace with Israel, to abandon the struggle of Hamas, and to walk away from Lebanon.
But why take an either-or approach to negotiating with the Saudis as opposed to negotiating with Syria? Let me play another clip of Sandra Day O'Connor, the retired Supreme Court Justice, of course, and a member of the Iraq Study Group, speaking on this program last Thursday.
Well, it doesn't preclude trying to address first and foremost the situation in Iraq, which our report tries to do. But we recognize that there is a need for a renewed and sustained commitment by the United States to a comprehensive Arab-Israeli peace on all fronts.
On all fronts. So what she said there and in some other ways at other times in our conversation is that all these things are related. They're related to Iraq. They're related to each other. So if Israel starts talking to Saudi Arabia and Israel starts talking about the Golan Heights and Syria pressuring Hamas and all these stuff, all these things with Syria and some of the other things that are being suggested, this multi-pronged pressure is the best potential or offers the best potential for the right outcomes in all these situations. Why not?
Look, I wish it were true. I mean, let's all be clear that Sandra Day O'Connor, Yossi Belin, David Harris, and everyone else is searching for the same thing. I mean, we're all searching for stabilization in the Middle East, an end to the ongoing conflicts, and a modicum of stability that might eventually lead to some regional harmony. So there's no disagreement about the goals in that regard. But the Middle East is an inexact science, as we've all learned. No one, no country, no task force, no individual has gotten the Middle East completely right, Brian. In fact, most of us have gotten it wrong more than we've gotten it right.
Right, although one could argue that that goes for the Iraq War. I don't remember what your position exactly was on the Iraq War, but I think the conventional wisdom in Israel was that the U.S. going to war against Saddam Hussein would be good for Israel, and I'm not sure everybody feels that way now.
I think, firstly, Brian, that in Israel, going back to Yitzhak Rabin of blessed memory, he always said, and I heard it from him more than once going back to the early 90s, Israel's main preoccupation even then was Iran, not Iraq. Iraq was a threat, yes, but Iran was always seen as the greater threat, and that was the principal focus of Israeli strategic planners. And I would also add that American Jews and the American Jewish Committee studied them several times along the way, were more disinclined to support the war in Iraq from the beginning than other Americans, but that's water under the bridge. Mm-hmm. Look, we have a series of problems here, and the Baker Study Group comes along and it offers its 79 recommendations, and we all want to believe it's a panacea, but the reality is, as you start to think about it, start to parse the report, we have a set of problems in the Middle East that goes far beyond the Arab-Israeli conflict. And if there are those who think that unpacking the Arab-Israeli conflict, solving it, will somehow magically address the issue of the Iranian nuclear program, of Syria's attempt to reestablish hegemony in Lebanon, of this growing Shiite-Sunni divide which threatens the entire region, I think they're kidding themselves. I wish it were otherwise.
David Harris, Executive Director of the American Jewish Committee, my guest on WNYC, as we get reaction to the Israel-specific parts of the Iraq Study Group report. It may be kidding ourselves to think that the road to peace in Baghdad runs through Jerusalem. But what's interesting to me here is, as I dug deeper into the report in the few days after it was released, I was surprised to see, and this is largely why we're talking about this morning, I was surprised to see how specific they got with respect to Syria. They didn't get very specific with respect to Iran and how to bring Iran into the fold in some positive way when they say we should talk directly to Iran about Iraq. But they did get specific with this set of at least starting points with Syria. And so we're taking a closer look. And when they say Israel returns the Golan Heights, Syria pressures Hamas to recognize Israel, the U.S. and others guarantee security at the Israeli-Syria border after the return of the Golan Heights, it's surprisingly specific to me. And so what Yossi Beilin says is, well, okay, that's not enough. Because what you say in your press release that I read to him is right, that it's not enough just for Syria to agree to those things that are written up in the report. Syria has to stop actively supporting Hamas. Syria has to stop actively supporting Hezbollah, which actually is in the report. Syria has to shut down the Hamas headquarters in Damascus, specifically, mm-hmm. and the rest of the terrorist infrastructure supported directly by the Assad regime, as you write. But he says, yes, those would be the ultimate goals of negotiation. What we do now is seize on the Iraq Study Group report to say, well, yeah, let's have direct negotiations with Syria. These are the endpoints. If they fall short of those acceptable endpoints, then Israel does not sign on the dotted line. But let's seize the moment and start with those talks rather than say, we won't even talk to you until you do what we want.
There's a history here, and it's impossible to separate ourselves from the history, Brian, much as we want to not to be prisoners of history, but, if you will, authors of history. And I think we all do, again, because peace is the goal, eventually with Syria, as with the others. But the fact of the matter is that if a country is inclined to move ahead, there are an endless number of ways to demonstrate a willingness to rethink previous behavior. Israel had previously rejected a two-state settlement until Ehud Barak came along and said Israel stands for a two-state settlement. It sent a clear message that negotiation on the basis of a two-state settlement with the Palestinians became possible. And interestingly, once he set that as his goal, it was followed even by Ariel Sharon, who had devoted his previous life to rejecting the notion of a two-state settlement. And now Ehud Olmert, who was also previously of the Likud party, comes along, and his platform says, we want a two-state settlement. It creates an environment. It ripens the diplomatic fruit. It sends a message. Where are the messages from Syria? Syria has any number of ways, Brian, to at least begin this process with a wink and a nod, and it has to be more than just the kind of feigned hint that maybe under certain circumstances we might be willing to consider talking about. Syria, as we speak, is reasserting its control over Lebanon, a country which just a year ago was liberated from Syrian troops. Syria has not even recognized the independence of Lebanon. But
let me jump in on that point, because just as you ask, what does Iraq have to do with Israel? What does Lebanon, except Hezbollah's military in southern Lebanon, have to do with Israel? You'll answer the question, but do you really care if Syria is controlling Lebanon if they don't sponsor Hezbollah attacks from southern Lebanon into Israel?
But Brian, the problem with the question is the words except and if. Excuse me. Those are very big conditions here.
Even choking on the words, I'll let you clear your throat for a minute, is David Harris, Executive Director of the American Jewish Committee, second of two views we're getting on the specific proposals in the Iraq Study Group report regarding a Syria-Israel peace process. Dr. Harris, go ahead.
Your listeners should not read into it any exasperation with the Syrians. But the fact of the matter is that the words except and if are very big exceptions and ifs. Hezbollah has as its stated goal, and this is not me speaking, this is its charter speaking, the destruction of the state of Israel. So we can't simply separate what goes on in Lebanon from Israel's future. If Syria were serious, for example, Brian, they could, starting today, seal the border with Lebanon to ensure that Hezbollah is not provided with new missiles.
But that's the end point of negotiations, isn't it?
No. As I said, I believe that one has to begin with certain signals. There is a resolution, 1701, adopted by the UN Security Council in August. So this would not be a gesture to Israel per se. This would be a recognition by Syria of its international obligations, according to the UN resolution, that it will abide by that. Officially, Syria has to say nothing whatsoever about a gesture toward Israel. But the Israelis, they read the tea leaves as well as anyone. Syria knows where the two Israeli kidnapped soldiers are. Syria knows that its border with Lebanon is being crossed every day by the transshipment of weaponry.
We're going to be out of time in a minute, but let me ask the same question in a slightly different way. What does Israel lose by embracing the Iraq Study Group proposal in this respect and by saying right out loud and right up front, as Balin did, but if Syria doesn't agree to something that's really meaningful to protect Israel's border from Lebanon and to disengage with Hamas, then we're going to say no at the end of the day? What does Israel lose by starting down that road that way?
Look, the fact of the matter is, Brian, that Israel is always exploring, usually very quietly, far away from the media scrutiny, changes in behavior and possibilities for peace. And there are often things going on behind the scenes, and rightly so. If there really is a belief in Israel that there is a possibility of peace with Syria, I have no doubt that the Israeli leadership will pursue it vigorously. But the fact of the matter is that the problems with the Baker Study Group report are, in effect, we reward Syria and Iran. It doesn't matter how they word it. The bottom line in Damascus and Tehran is they read it as we are being rewarded for our bad behavior. There is no incentive for us to change our behavior. And secondly, there's a notion that all the problems in the end go back to the Arab-Israeli conflict. It's not true, number one. And number two, Brian, it ignores totally Israel's determined efforts to make peace, even without the Baker Study Group, but absent a partner. Where is the partner? How can peace be achieved? That's the bottom line problem that Israel faces. This government seeks peace. It was elected on a platform of peace. And it doesn't need arm twisting to make peace. It needs a partner.
And there you have two views on Israel and the Iraq Study Group. That second one coming from David Harris. He's the Executive Director of the American Jewish Committee. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Brian.
One peace. Try radio. We'll explain in a minute. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.